we go. You got a marvelous vibe, and I know it starts from inside. So fill your heart with pride and let your light shine brightly, yo, don't hide. You're a work of art, unforgettable and off the charts.
Welcome to a podcast dedicated to your mental health. I'm Bailey with the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hi, I'm Christy Edwards. I'm the executive director and a therapist at Centers for Children and Families.
Hi, I'm Melanie Size. I'm the marketing and development director at Centers for Children and Families.
Together, we're bringing you tips and tricks on how to navigate this thing called life. This is Center Solutions. Due to the nature of some of the topics that are discussed, listener discretion is advised. Not only are you getting free therapy today provided by our one and only Christy Edwards, who is the therapist on the show, it's close to Halloween, and so we're also handing out serotonin like it's candy. We're going to talk about happy things today and how kindness can affect not only your physical health, but also your mental health. So it's scientifically proven that being kind improves your physical health. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I found so much research on kindness, and it was fun. This was sort of a fun project for me because in the world we're in today, we are living in strange times, 2020, a time of great adversity. Unfortunately, we've had a lot to take on this year. I think it's a great opportunity to take a look at ourselves and think about being kind to others as well as to ourselves. And so here's some of the stuff, all of the good stuff that I learned. kindness produces oxytocin. It's sometimes known as the love hormone. Oxytocin causes the release of a chemical called nitric oxide, which dilates the blood vessels, reducing blood pressure, which that's like something that people take in order to get their blood pressure yeah. down. I remember yes. like family members.
Yeah, not to sound like a like we're talking about a pyramid scheme today, but this is all natural and free, and you can do it on your own.
Yeah. yeah. which like, makes it even better.
Yeah. yeah, it's like stuff you normally pay for. Right. You can actually find ways to get your brain to produce these chemicals that we need. Oxytocin also promotes an increase in self-esteem and optimism, and we can all use some of that. Mm-hmm. It boosts energy. There's a professor at Berkeley that reported half of participants in a study felt stronger and more energetic after helping others with increased feelings of self-worth. According to Harvard Health Medical School, a recent study reported that being kind to ourselves, others, or simply observing kindness, which is interesting, promoted feelings of happiness. So that kind of makes me think of when you're watching a video of somebody doing something really nice and out of the ordinary or reading a story. It just really warms your heart and changes the way you feel in that moment.
Yeah, and almost automatically you get a smile on your face, yeah, right? So it's like, I didn't intentionally do that, but it's the...
Yes,
uplift.
And you want to share it with other people.
Yeah. I like immediately think about the guy skateboarding with the cranberry juice, which has gone viral, you know, and it's just he's just a whole vibe. Like his energy, you can just feel it through the screen.
Mm-hmm. We're just happy to see somebody smiling for a change, I think.
Right.
Kindness generates serotonin. Kindness stimulates the production of serotonin, which promotes calmness and a peaceful feeling that combats depression and anxiety. We all could use some of that. It also helps in healing physical wounds, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. It helps decrease pain and increases those endorphins. Mm-hmm. And it decreases anxiety. A University of British Columbia study showed that a group of highly anxious individuals who performed at least 6 acts of kindness a week had a significant increase in positive moods after 1 month. They reported higher levels of relationship satisfaction and a decrease in social avoidance and social anxiety. All of that's some therapy mumbo-jumbo,
that
right?
mumbo-jumbo. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, right now, remember, everything you're seeing right now is like in a world where you can be anything, be kind.
Yes.
It's like, I think it's once again, it's a reminder that while we can't cure COVID and we can't solve all the world's problems, we can be kind, and it's going to make us feel better, and us being kind to other people is going to make them feel better. So yes. Let's do our part, right?
So I'd have to think, so these are things, the list that I just read from these studies, this helps you if you promote kindness, but certainly that has to affect the person that's receiving the kindness.
Oh, yeah.
Because all of that, I mean, it's just, it's the goodness in our world, and it gives us that time to think, wow, there is some good out there, and I need to be happy about that.
And if you're, and if it's like a random act of kindness or an intentional act of kindness to someone you know, people do walk away feeling connected. You know, and their levels of everything that we want to go up, the levels of things that are the bad hormones go down. So, I mean, one person can influence many people just through being kind and themselves.
So, I guess to start with, let's talk about being kind to yourself.
And one of the things that you need to do is cultivate your inner cheerleader, right? You have, I mean, you have to start with you. How can you go out and be kind to other people and make it feel genuine unless you've really started with yourself? So, you know, we have to still or quiet that inner critic, shut that voice down with an inner advocate.
Yeah,
you know, so
we all
like
know the inner critic, right? I mean, that's the voice I think that speaks to us most of us. I'd love to meet someone who has the inner cheerleader already. Like, what is that?
I don't know how that happens. I don't know, you know, is that something that the world does to us? Like, if we get too self-confident or too full of ourselves, somebody kind of shuts us down. So instead of looking in the mirror and going, I feel awesome today, or I look awesome today, that you go, my hair doesn't look great today. That's the first thing you say. Mm-hmm. So what we want you to do is just call it what it is. My hair could look better, but I look pretty darn good. I'm ready to go out and, you know, and start my day. So it's
aren't we kind of taught to not, like, that maybe it's kind of conceited. It's a form of conceit to think good things. I think that's a terrible thing that we think that, because there clearly is a difference.
And I think maybe that came, you know, like my parents' generation is like, don't get too big for your britches, right? You know, you're not all that. It's, you know, I think it was just that reminder to be, you know, considerate of others, put others first. Instead
sort of like,
you know,
humble, like a form of humility.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. At a time when we need to be able, to me, it's easier to knock a little self-confidence out of somebody than to build self-confidence. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather you have too much, because the world's going to bring you down, you know, some. So it's not like you want to start from, you know, negative. You want to be healthy as much as you can.
You can easily find negativity. That's just go on social media real quick. So why do it to yourself?
I think there's definitely some balance in the kindness factor, though, because if you really are trying to look at the good things in yourself with a kind spirit, you can't really be overly pompous in that moment.
Right.
I mean, it's trying to be, I think you have to really, if you're thinking about what kindness is and digging deep, you have to be really mindful about the practice.
So it's really not just a surface level of I look good today and nobody can tell me I don't. It's like start with that to build up your self-esteem and your self-confidence, but then to take that to the next layer under to say, you know, I'm also a good person, I'm a kind person, I pay it forward, I care about other people, you know, those kind of things. So, you know, one of the things you also need to do whenever you're trying to quiet that inner critic is to stop and remind yourself of the moments you have shined. Pretend you're talking to a friend and tell yourselves three things that make you great.
Yeah, it's easy to tell your friend, hey, you're doing great, or if your friend's feeling down or going through a breakup or loses a job, you're going to be right there and say, you know what, maybe there are better things out there for you, but do we tell that to ourselves, or do we just say, oh, I'm such a loser?
I think sometimes we do go to the negative.
Yeah.
You know, give yourself recognition when you achieve something. Treat yourself with a special reward. Once again, there's not always somebody waiting behind you to you know, recognize that for you. So you need to recognize it. You know, and when you know that feeling that you get, then you're more likely to share that and to spread that. So, also, you've got to be ready to forgive yourself. Remember that we all make mistakes. Let it go. That's been my mantra for so long. I'm just like, everybody makes mistakes. And rarely is there anything that happens that you can't hit the undo button, unless you're like, you know, a heart surgeon or a brain surgeon. It's like, whoops, you can't do that. But most of the time you can fix it. You know, even if it's just to have to say I'm sorry many, many times. I mean, you can do that.
Well, you can acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. And then go on and not obsess about it. I think a lot of times when we make mistakes, we play that record in our head, and it keeps going, and it picks up later. And then it kind of, it becomes one of our layers.
Agreed.
And then, And then we have to hire Christy to help us get over it.
And then we start. Well, that's job security for me. Thank y'all for being insecure and needy sometimes.
And worrying all the time. Worry is a useless emotion.
Yes.
I don't need it. Mm-mm. So when you start to worry, just remember it's not benefiting you in any way.
That's right. And it clouds your judgment. It clouds your, you know, well-being, everything. It's like, I got to put that aside. Got to just focus on what I can. So in addition to being your own inner cheerleader, you need to be able to respect yourself, right? Practice self-respect. Dictate your own value. Let your inner cheerleader remind you to stop letting others dictate your value for you. Set boundaries and practice saying no. I mean, how many times have y'all heard me here? You've got to practice saying no, because the expectation is that if somebody asks you for something, or, you know, that you're going to automatically say yes, and we become people pleasers, and then sometimes that...
That's what we do. We mistake people pleasing for kindness, and we're afraid to say no because we want to be the nice person and do what's right, and then we're unhappy with that decision because we know we can't really fulfill that obligation, or we didn't really want to. I think it's important to have a little respect for what is okay with you. And that's another part of that mindful kindness, I think.
I think that would make a good episode. We should have an episode about boundaries. Definitely.
Especially now, because we've melted boundaries. I mean, we talk about this, Melanie, all the time, because we have our offices set up at home and at work, and so it's really easy, like, oh, I'm not doing anything right now, so I'm going to go sit and read my email, you know, hammer out a little work. And pretty soon you can find yourself working a 10-hour day, maybe not steady, but, you know, then you're exhausted for the next few days. So setting the boundaries and being able to say, I'm going to shut this down because I have to acknowledge my needs. And like Melanie said, avoid overcommitment.
Yes, and that can be with anybody. It can be with family. It doesn't. I always think about, you know, when people ask you to volunteer for things, but it's also at home with your kids. You know, that's why that's part of discipline. You have to set boundaries with your kids. You can't give them everything in the world. So all of that has to do with practicing self-respect.
And then whenever you overcommit and you don't follow through, then you really hammer away on yourself. And that's not what it's about. It's an opportunity to do something that you wanted to do, or an opportunity to say, I can't accommodate that right now.
Yes.
People need to move on. So then we want you to take care of yourself. Self-care is essential. Every single day, carve out time for something that brings you joy. Draw, color, journal, read, watch Netflix, walk your dog.
What's your joy, Christy?
My joy, and it changes, my joy is getting home, taking off all my work clothes, putting on, you know, because I'm really trying to make sure I take my work hat off and put on my, you know, I'm at home hat, you know, getting my dogs in, have some dinner and sit down, you know, just to watch something good on TV.
Yeah.
So, and it's really that simple for me right now. Before, I felt like it's like I had to be doing something. I've got to walk 2 miles. I've got to do whatever. At this point, I'm like, I've been through all the stuff with COVID. I'm just going to relax.
Yeah, that's good. It's just a little bit of mindless pleasure.
Yeah, yeah.
Just relaxing and letting yourself zone out.
What's yours right now?
I don't know. I feel like running is definitely part of my joy. And unfortunately, my treadmill is broken. So I've had to be running in the cold. So, I mean, I am on YouTube trying to figure it out, and I will. But that's a big part of my joy. But sometimes it's just like, you know, just making myself that salad to bring to work today. Ooh. Was just...
I saw that one today.
I don't know. It's just finding good things in the small things, I think.
If a treadmill sponsor is listening...
Yes, that would be excellent. Please.
I was going to say, Melanie, I have one. It's been in the garage. The last time I was on it, it was working. So you are welcome to it if you want it. So.
Don't be surprised when it's missing.
Yeah, no, you can have it. So what's your joy?
Well, like you, it changes. But always, I can go for a drive. And that really just clears my mind. And it's just something I enjoy doing.
Okay, I take that back. That's mine, too.
Okay, yeah.
Since I got a Jeep, and that's been my total joy. Like, yeah. I have loved it.
I mean, you guys know I'm a car person, so I just get in something and go. And that's how I've always been since I was very young. I just go. And I think it reminds me that I do have choices, and I'm not stuck. So that reminds me I can travel if I, you know, there's options in the world. Like, you're not defined or stuck by what's going on if you had a bad day or something like that. So just to get out of my current environment really helps.
So let me ask you this. Do you blare music or do you like peace and quiet?
Oh, music. Okay, and I do it alone so I can put it on repeat so no one can judge me.
There
so
you
I
go.
Can just put the same song on repeat and then...
Until you learn all the words.
Yeah. And then I don't want to hear it for like 2 weeks.
I hear that.
Yeah.
So then we also want to remind people to honor your physical self. You know, that's like, you know, getting good sleep, practicing proper nutrition, getting some exercise.
Yeah, I think it's important, even if it's mild. I mean, going for a walk, just connecting with your physical self, not eating, you know, fast food every day, trying to be mindful about those things that are going to help you stay healthy because, you know, mental health affects physical health affects mental health, it's all intertwined. So.
And once again, we want to remind people that if you feel good about where you are, what you're doing, and yourself, it's going to be easier to be kind to yourself and to others.
True.
Mm-hmm. And something that really brings me joy is to be kind to other people, to surprise people with random gifts. I like to buy stuff for people and just leave it for them. You know, it truly brings me joy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So just the small acts of kindness really, I think... If you stick with it, too, if you continue to provide those acts of kindness, you start getting used to that feeling. Mm-hmm. And you're like, hey, my oxytocin is just, like, on high today. Mm-hmm. And so I think you start attracting that in return. Don't you think, Christy? Like, if you start being positive and attracting positivity, it's going to come back tenfold to you.
I mean, we talk about karma all the time. We talk about what goes out there comes back tenfold. It's, you know, the importance of... It's important to being kind. And what I love is that through all of this, this is kind of what we've landed on as far as this is necessary in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the political, you know, atmosphere, all these things in, you know, Black Lives Matter, all the things that are so emotionally fraught right now. If you just treat people with kindness and respect, you can kind of overlay that.
I think you stand out. And I think, I mean, that brings us to right into what is next, and that's practicing kindness to others.
Mm-hmm.
But at a time when we're used to opening up our laptop or our iPad and phone and seeing people commenting on each other's posts or news posts, and it's terrible, you know, I think it's important to find the compassion. So there's some components for finding compassion.
Bring attention or awareness to recognizing that there is suffering in the world. I mean, if there's anybody that doesn't believe there is right now, I'm not sure what world they're living in.
I want to live in that world.
Yeah, me too. So feel emotionally moved by the suffering that you see, wishing that there could be relief from that suffering, and having a readiness to take an action to relieve that suffering.
So it's like if you are mindful in that experience, then it gives you that time to really channel some compassion.
Right. And like you said, if you're mindful and you have awareness, self-awareness, only then can you truly, I think, put out compassion and kindness. Because otherwise you're just doing business. You're like a business transaction. I'm being nice to you because that's kind of expected, and I'm not really putting it out there in the right way, so you may not feel it in the right way, and I'm not getting from it what I feel like I should get from it, right?
I think it's kind of like checking in on people out of obligation.
Good
I think
point.
If you stop for a minute and really remind yourself, okay, this is why I need to check on mom, dad, sister, brother, whatever outside of my little, you know, and remind yourself the connection that you have so that it is genuine and it's compassion-driven, not obligation-driven.
See, I love that. That's the difference. Yeah.
If you're not putting 100% into it and truly trying to be kind to someone, it's not going to come back. It doesn't work that way.
Well, you can feel when someone's doing that to you also.
Because you know what happens.
It happens.
Here, I made you some bread.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I get a hug. I mean, I don't, you know, it's like...
And kindness doesn't have to be a grand gesture. You don't have to go buy something for someone. What are some other examples of just, like, simple kindness that you can do?
I mean, simple kindness is letting somebody, you know, in Midland traffic right now, you know, Melanie and I are coming up A Street trying to get here. If you just let somebody in, you know, if everybody just, like, wove in, you get to go, you get to go, you get to go. Or if you're arriving at the checkout counter at the same time, you know, that you let somebody go, or you help somebody unload their groceries in the car, or
have some patience with somebody who's going a little slow or struggling, and think about just if you which path you choose if you stop and really pay attention. If you're going to be angry about it, Mm-hmm. That's going to set the tone for whatever happens in the next few hours, at least, okay. possibly day, mm-hmm. you know. And if you don't, I think it's easier to brush it off and forget about it.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
I like what you said, set the tone. So when you wake up, set the tone for your day. Yeah, mm-hmm. you have that power to set the tone for your day.
Because it's just as easy to wake up and say, I'm going to smile, put a smile on my face, and I'm going to go forward. And I think, you know, one of the things Melanie said is compliment the first three people you talk to today. When I read that, I'm like, that's easy. And it's... That can be genuine because you can find something nice to say to people. It may be more of an effort than to just growl at them if you haven't had your coffee. But the point is we're trying to promote kindness. We're trying to promote a sense of well-being.
Even just a smile.
Smile.
Sometimes that takes effort.
I agree.
But, you know, just smiling, just being in your office or with your family.
With your family.
Treating your family like... I know we struggle with that sometimes because I'm like, okay, let's not be treating each other here in this house worse than we treat anybody else.
It's true.
And that's just natural, I guess. Yeah. But if you're mindful about it, I think you can make a difference. And so
I would challenge people that might be reading this. Melanie has pulled together examples from the Random Act of Kindness Foundation. There's 50 mm-hmm. examples of things that you can do.
And they're on the website.
And is either going to promote it, you know, promote kindness or, you know, make you feel good about yourself. I mean, maybe, you know, look at that, but maybe within your own family that you adopt. We're going to adopt three things that we're going to do for, you know, for this week.
Mm-hmm.
What are three things that we can do?
And as nonprofit organizations here, I mean, it would be a travesty if we didn't mention volunteering It's such a serotonin boosting kind of act, and it is an act of kindness. And if you find something that really speaks to you, it is meaningful to you, and you get out there in the trenches, not just sitting on a board or in a committee, but really just go and be a part of what they are doing
mm-hmm.
in whatever capacity you can. It really does, it does something for your soul. And then, in turn, it does something, obviously, for the recipients, the organization. Mm-hmm. And we all need volunteers, so,
right.
you know, I would be completely amiss not to mention that.
Yes.
But
thank you for that.
Sure.
And then the other one, you know, the last one, Melanie, regarding social media, mm-hmm. that's so important. You want to talk about that?
I just think, I mean, once again, we see so much negativity. Avoid confrontation. It's very tempting to get into a fight with somebody, especially because you're like, oh, I know exactly how to put them in their place. I know the right words. And I mean, you might. It's not going to change anything. It's going to encourage more people to come in. Someone's going to attack you.
Mm-hmm.
There's really not a long, if once again, being mindful about it, stopping and thinking about what's going to be the repercussions, what will be the result of this. It's not. I can't think of a good result in online confrontation. Sorry, but I cannot. you know, and sometimes when you're reading angry language online, I know I'm tempted to be like, "Ugh, I'm done with this person, no more." But if you kind of stop and take a look at the person and picture the human behind the keyboard, and try to think, you know, this person has a mom, this person has a spouse, this person is actually a human being. Probably has some wounds.
Mm-hmm.
If you go through that process, it's a little easier to be compassionate. At least let it go. I mean, so that you're not obsessed with thinking how horrible the person that is. Because I think that's what really incites feelings of hatred in our world.
I agree.
So we can, you know, we don't have to go that route. And try to spread some kindness in your media, social media posts. I mean, you can go in and get on someone's page or their Instagram and compliment them or... You know, say something nice mm-hmm. on your own posts and it just make an effort to be that person that's going to spread some good out there.
Yeah, just looking at that list that you mentioned, Melanie, that is provided on the center's website, which at the end of this episode, we will record some of those for a visually impaired audience so that you can hear some of those examples. But one that caught my eye going off of social media is... if you have a LinkedIn account, write a recommendation for a coworker or connection.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
That's very creative. I think that's a special way that you could really possibly help someone.
Because even if we think about it, we don't always do it, right? We don't always, I mean, I'm always like, I'm going to write a letter to the editor saying how great these people were. And I never do. Or to, that person needs to know what a great waitress or waiter that they had.
Yeah.
And you don't. And you know what? What does it take? It takes 5 minutes.
True.
And a stamp or an email to send it.
And I also think if you have a thought, fleeting thought of someone and thinking something really good about them, send them a text. It's easy to do. Mm-hmm. Let them know that you appreciated something that they did or you know. And I think a lot of times it's nicer to be able to compliment effort, that's just me, than it is to say whatever you, however you look, that's easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Christy always has the best jewelry ever, but
you do today, but it's like, can you describe what you're wearing?
Yeah, it's like, it looks like turquoise and maybe pearls, but it's actually baked clay.
Oh, cool.
So, and it's super light, and I just saw it, my niece does a online marketing for a little online boutique. And
you can say what it is.
Okay.
You can shamelessly plug it.
So her name is Lacey Bowers, and she works for Horse Creek Boutique, and it's out of Spearman, tiny town of Spearman. And they're just like growing and growing in popularity, and they have, you know, affordable clothing, and they have this cute jewelry, but baked clay, so it's super light, and it looks expensive. So
it's really pretty.
I'm always after
you always
that,
have so. The best jewelry. But
thank you, Melanie.
You know, there's also, on a deeper level, things that people have, that we all have talents, and you can see that in people. And if you're really mindful about it, you can really see it. I think a lot of times it's easier for us to see the things that annoy us around the world, and especially right now. Mm-hmm. I think that we're so charged, but we can all, at least the three of us here, can all make a commitment to trying to develop our own personal practice of kindness.
I'll take that challenge.
Some other examples of how you can pay it forward is pay it backwards. Buy coffee for the person behind you in line. Compliment the first three people you talk to today. Send a positive text message to 5 different people right now. Post inspirational sticky notes around your neighborhood, office, or school. Tell someone they dropped a dollar, even though they didn't, then give them a dollar. Donate old towels or blankets to an animal shelter. Throw a party to celebrate someone just for being who they are, which is awesome. Leave unused coupons next to corresponding products in the grocery store. Place a positive body image note in jean pockets of a department store. Set an alarm on your phone to go off at 3 different times during the day. In those moments, do something kind for someone else. Send a gratitude email to a coworker who deserves more than recognition. Practice self-kindness and spend 30 minutes doing something you love today. Center Solutions is a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. Post-production work is done by Bailey Hennis. Content is provided by Melanie Size and Christy Edwards. Contact Centers for Children and Families at 432-570-1084 or the Recording Library, 432-682-2731. Email Melanie with questions you want answered on the show at msize@centerstexas.org. That's msize@centerstx.org. Both nonprofits are on all social media platforms. See you next time.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Center Solutions Podcast, followed by the Noon Book Hour at 12.
Because our regularly scheduled program was not available at broadcast time, we bring you the following special presentation.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by the Georgia Radio Reading Service, GARS. Hello, I am Herbert Gilmore, and this is Prevention Magazine. I'll be reading articles from the November 2020 issue. The first story is, "It's the Most Challenging Time of the Year," by Nicole Natale. Family, they're the people who make the holidays special. and let's be frank, stressful at times. Here's how to handle three tough situations so you can connect with loved ones while staying true to yourself. This year has been unusual, to say the least, and since the holidays tend to be a time of heightened emotion, sometimes beautiful, sometimes painful, you may be feeling extra comprehensive about the most wonderful time of the year. While you probably face the same stresses you do every holiday season, there may be new challenges thrown into the mix this year thanks to COVID-19, social unrest, and polarizing election. A key point to remember, having a normal holiday may not be the goal to strive for. Our way of life has changed, but that doesn't have to be stressful if we view change with a sense of adventure, says life coach Trivia Williams. Use this time to discuss the changes you have experienced with your entire family and encourage one another as you find ways to adapt and start new family traditions. But to find peace this season, you may also need to rethink your perception of conflict. Most people don't like conflict, and that comes from their upbringing, says conflict resolution strategist Lynn Maureen Hurdle. Many were raised to believe conflict was negative and something to be avoided. In actuality, the only thing that has created real change in the world is conflict. Here's how to start making positive change with three common areas of strife. When there's arguing at the dinner table, the most stressful time for my clients is the holidays because of the disagreements around politics, family dynamics, and religious belief, Hurdle says. People either dread going to holiday parties or decide that this year they won't attend because of the stress involved when these topics arise. If you do choose to attend, Hurdle recommends being clear on where you stand on issues important to you. I would have given different advice a year ago, but this is a unique time and we are witnessing a cultural shift, she says. Think about where you can be flexible and where you need to draw a line, because there will always be guests who want to push buttons by debating hot topics, Hurdle offers. Ideas for de-escalating hurtful conflict. Set boundaries before the holiday dinner. You could say, Mom, I'm happy that we're all getting together for the holidays, but this is an especially stressful time. I like to keep the conversation to topics that don't lead us into the usual arguments we have when we're together. Take a break. If things get too heated during a political discussion, you can say, I see this as leading to a place where we usually disagree. I'm not going to be participating in this conversation. In fact, I'm going to get up and take a little break. Then go somewhere and take a few deep breaths. Listen more than you speak. Listening deeply helps you understand your loved one's opinions. Ask clarifying questions such as, could you share more about that topic? Once you have clarity, say something like, that's one way of looking at it. Here's my perspective. While political discussions can be uncomfortable, Hurdle says, conversations that allow everyone a chance to speak and listen can be beneficial. Family members whose views are different than yours can expose you to alternate thinking, she says. Gaining knowledge about various perspectives helps you think about your own ideas and beliefs. When you've experienced loss. If someone important is gone, the holidays take on a different character. It's supposed to be a time of celebration. Everyone around you is expecting you to be happy, says grief educator V. Ophelia Regault. If that's not what you're feeling inside, then this time of year is hard. Beloved traditions get tough, too. If your loved one always made a special meal or was the person who held the family together, it can feel as if the sense of normalcy has been taken away, Regault says. Here's her guidance for addressing your grief. Be honest about your emotions. Don't succumb to pressure to heal according to others' expectations or put on a happy face when you're grieving. If you're not up to celebrating, it's okay to bow out of gatherings that may be emotionally challenging. Honor the person's memory. Consider volunteering for a cause your loved one would have supported. Being altruistic may help bring healing and reduce feelings of grief. Write a letter. This is a powerful exercise in healing grief, especially if you didn't have the opportunity to say goodbye to your loved one. Write your emotions in a letter and read it out loud, alone or with family. Though there is no timeline for grieving, Regault says the best way to move through it is to seek support. There's an emotional benefit to being around people when you're loved during the holidays, as they empathize with your feelings and can offer comfort, she says. When the family sees food as love, in many households, declining a slice of grandma's pie is not okay. Food is a great way to bring loved ones together, but it can also be a cause of tension, says Amy Gorin, RDN. Many families equate food with love, showering guests with dishes that they've spent hours creating. They want to make others happy with food. This makes saying no a difficult task, and if you're the cook, hearing it can be hard too. Here's how Gordon suggests navigating these issues. Bring your own food. This can be easiest for you, but if you're concerned that your host might be insulted, highlight that you're aiming to alleviate stress for them. You could say, I have so many dietary restrictions that I wouldn't dream of having you cook a special meal just for me. I'm going to bring sides and a dessert that I can eat. I'll have enough for everyone to try if they like. Pack it up for later. If you really don't want any dessert but think you or someone in your household may want some later, you can tell Grandma, I so appreciate that you made my favorite dessert. I'm stuffed from the dish-licious meal, though I could take a piece to eat tomorrow. Ask about dietary restrictions ahead of time. If you're the host, you can then figure out your menu based on your guest's answers, and you'll be less likely to get surprised and hurt by having someone turn down a dish you worked hard on. You can show your family how much you mean in many other ways. Consider giving everyone a handwritten card or a small gift bag with de-stressors such as tea bags and essential oils, Gordon says. Remember that the holidays are about celebrating important people in your life. That article was It's the Most Challenging Time of the Year by Nicole Natale. The next article is The Doctor is In, The Hysterectomy Decision by Lauren Stryker, M.D. After years of putting up with monthly flood-like periods, you've consulted with your doctor who has advised you that the time has come to get rid of the source of the bleeding and proceed with a hysterectomy. Before you check your calendar to schedule surgery, you may want to consider whether removing your uterus is your only and best option. Roughly 500,000 hysterectomies are performed every year, while approximately one-third of American women, most between ages of 40 and 44, will eventually lose their uteruses. Black women are consistently the most likely to have hysterectomies. One logical explanation is that black women are the highest risk for developing fibroid tumors, by far the most common reason for the surgery. The racial disparity isn't seen after age 50, when fibroids are rarely an issue. That said, one factor in disproportionate number of young black women undergoing hysterectomy is that many black women live in areas where alternatives to surgery are not offered, and they're less likely to be informed that they have other options. One study revealed that 38% of women of all races were never even offered an alternative, despite the availability of other safe, effective treatments that can be considered before proceeding with surgery. Ultimately, what empowers women is the ability to make a good choice, whether surgery or not, based on accurate, balanced, and scientific information. Understanding alternatives. Five major categories send someone down the road to the surgery. After fibroid tumors, abnormal bleeding is the most common diagnosis. Pelvic pain, often from endometriosis, is next on the list, followed by pelvic organ prolapse, such as a dropped uterus, bladder, or rectum. Last and responsible for the smallest number of hysterectomies is a gynecologic cancer. Other than cancer, virtually every one of these diagnoses has many alternative treatments, which in some but not all cases will eliminate the need for removal of the uterus. For example, many fibroids can be shrunk with a fibroid immobilization or removed, myomectomy, while leaving the uterus in place. Heavy bleeding can be often reduced with medication. Endometrial ablation or placement of progestin, IUD, endometriosis can be suppressed using a number of different medications, and the associated pain can be reduced with pelvic floor physical therapy, a treatment that can also sometimes be used for pelvic organ prolapse. Women who do go ahead with hysterectomies are often not offered minimally invasive procedure, vaginal, laparoscopic, or robotic, as opposed to removal of the uterus through a traditional abdominal incision. This is particularly true for black women who are half as likely as white women to undergo a minimally invasive hysterectomy, meaning they end up with not only a longer recovery time, but also an increased risk of surgical complications. When is hysterectomy the best option? Still, it's important to emphasize that many hysterectomies are appropriate and beneficial. Defining unnecessary hysterectomy is actually somewhat subjective. Some would say that the only women who need hysterectomy are those who risk death if they forego the procedure. Using that criterion, only around 10% of women who end up with a hysterectomy need it. However, if one considers need more broadly, quality of life should also be taken into account. That means that even if a hysterectomy is not life-saving, it may still be a woman's best option. Some women are willing to put up with a lot to avoid losing their uterus. fertility being one reason, and are willing to have frequent visits to the gynecologist, ultrasounds, endometrial biopsies, and alternative therapies. Other women are done with the bleeding, the pain, say from endometriosis, the feeling that they're single-handedly supporting the tampon and pad industry, and planning their lives around their periods. It's an injustice to women who insist that they undergo multiple less effective treatments rather than one definitive treatment that will provide a permanent cure if the latter is what they feel is in their best interest. I ran a national poll of women who'd had hysterectomies and found that the overwhelming majority, 86%, were pleased with the result. Many commented that they wished they had done it sooner. The key is that they decided hysterectomy was the best option after weighing all the alternatives. Women who regretted the decision tended to be younger and specifically stated they hadn't been offered any other option. Even after a woman decides hysterectomy is her best option, her decisions are just beginning. Laparoscopic, robotic, vaginal, save the cervix, remove the cervix, keep the ovaries, lose the ovaries. Ideally, every woman who faces this issue should be provided with information in a non-biased, objective, and scientific way so she can make appropriate decisions based on her needs and desires. That way, women looking for alternatives won't feel they are being sold a procedure they're trying to avoid, and those who desire a hysterectomy will know what to expect. That article was The Doctor Is In, The Hysterectomy Decision by Lauren Stryker. Dr. Stryker is a clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. She's the author of The Essential Guide to Hysterectomy. The next article is Defying a Diagnosis. Experts say you can reverse prediabetes, but what does it really take? With a family history looming over her, carb lover and exercise avoider, Laura Shin decided to find out. The news arrived as my fiancé Peter and I were prepping for a dinner of creamy pesto linguine and crunchy ciabatta bread with pistachio gelato for dessert. My blood sugar was higher than normal. My nurse practitioner told me she was nice about it, but warned me that I should make dietary changes, cut down on sweets and foods with a heavy carb load. Never had a dinner plate seem so foreboding. She told me my hemoglobin A1C test, one of the ways to test for diabetes, had revealed that my blood sugar was in the pre-diabetic range. The results shouldn't have surprised me. I have a family history of diabetes. A great-grandmother lost her foot, so while part of me had been waiting for these results, most of me preferred to pretend that I was immune. I grew up on deep-fried roots, and I don't love cooking. I have a sweet tooth that can make a dentist cry. Plus, Peter is a fantastic cook who fries up the world's best breakfast potatoes, and lately, between obligatory work and non-obligatory Instagram scrolling, I've grown increasingly sedentary. So I saw the call from my NP as the equivalent of a warning that I've been speeding instead of a ticket or the loss of my license. When she told me to come back in a few months, I decided to go to the equivalent of driving school. What's so bad about diabetes? The first thing I learned was that scary stuff. Untreated diabetes can result in a stroke, kidney disease, loss of vision, along with at least 8 different skin conditions, most of which involve itching. About half of diabetes suffer from neuropathy, nerve damage that begins with tingling at the extremities and can progress to conditions that require amputation, as my great-grandmother came to know far too well. Then I looked into why certain delicious foods are a problem. The human body breaks down carbohydrates, including beans, corns, and oats, as well as my friend's pasta and sugar, into glucose, which enters the bloodstream. The pancreas creates the hormone insulin, which escorts glucose to the heart, brain, muscles, and tissues, where it is burned as fuel. But for me, along with 88 million other American adults on the pre-diabetes to diabetes spectrum, the pancreas can't keep up and it doesn't produce enough insulin. As a result, unchaperoned glucose is free to wreak havoc in the bloodstream. My pre-diabetes diagnosis meant my blood sugar levels were higher than average, but weren't yet in the diabetic range. For the most part, pre-diabetes and diabetes are preventable and even reversible, says Marilyn Tan, MD, chief of Stanford Endocrine Clinic. Long-term studies have shown how effective diet and exercise changes, says Rita Kalyani, MD, and diabetes specialist at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and a former chair of the American Diabetes Association's Clinical Guidelines Committee. There's a catch, though. The standard lifestyle advice doesn't work for everyone. In her 20s, Dr. Tan was surprised to find that she herself was pre-diabetic despite walking 20,000 steps a day and watching her carbohydrate intakes. Apparently, her family history was too much to overcome. Sometimes, despite their best efforts, people can't fully reverse abnormal numbers, Dr. Tan says. Could I reverse mine? The first step, a new grocery list. Change eating patterns is critical for reversing the progression of diabetes, but there's not a one-size-fits-all diet, Dr. Kalani says. Friends who had successfully managed pre-diabetes diagnosis raved about high-fat, low-carbohydrate diets, and a study published this year seems to back up such anecdotal evidence. It found that this way of eating was associated with reduced blood sugar levels and greater weight loss. I stripped almost all carbohydrates from my diet. A sugar addict going cold turkey, literally. I was tired, thirsty, agitated, but to my genuine amazement, after 4 days of craving ceased, I looked at my teen son's peanut butter and extra jelly sandwich and did not want one or two for myself. Other patients succeed with a fat and protein heavy keto or Atkins diet, Dr. Tan says, or sometimes intermittent fasting or vegan diet. Celeste Thomas, MD, a diabetes specialist and assistant professor at the University of Chicago, likes a Mediterranean diet which includes generous portions of fruits and vegetables. Beans and olives oil go along with moderate portions of fish, chicken, and cheese. Getting high-tech about what to eat. One of the reasons a variety of diets can work is that blood sugar responses to different foods may vary by individual, Dr. Tan says. So she recommends that people test how their blood sugar reacts to specific foods, like a dutiful student embarking on a science experiment. I got a prescription for a continuous glucose monitor. You wear it on your arm for 14 days, and it connects with an iPhone app that frequently retrieves blood sugar data and stores it. The results are fascinating. A favorite snack of mine, air popped popcorn, didn't do much to my blood sugar. Hooray for this experiment. But my blood sugar went sky high when I ate a handful of corn chips or a cup of Peter's breakfast potatoes. Wait, I hate this experiment. 2 tablespoons of honey-flavored natural yogurt were as bad for my blood sugar as a scoop of ice cream. Small amounts of whole grains such as farro provoked a lesser response than white rice. Good news, though. I said a silent said farewell to white rice. These differences could be explained by the glycemic index, an imprecise yet helpful tool for managing blood sugar. Higher GI foods have a greater and faster impact on blood sugar. Popcorn is lower on the index, while potatoes are high. The index isn't perfect. It doesn't account for individual differences based upon portion size or ways a food might be cooked. But overall, I discovered that my blood sugar spiked when I ate high GI foods and went to eat. The data also revealed that I was hitting the fridge pretty hard in the evening. At night, the body breaks down sugar stored in the liver and energy stored in fat cells, Dr. Thomas explains. Adding more fuel in the form of crackers and cheese was overloading my body's overnight blood sugar management system, Dr. Thomas suggests, taking an 11 to 12 hour break from food at night to give the body a chance to do its work and catch up. I gained about 5 pounds over the course of my 14-day let's eat all the foods experiment and saw how sugar made my blood sugar shoot up and then crash. I was weirdly relieved when the experiment concluded. Afterward, my dinner plate generally consists of organic meat, seasonal vegetables, and fruit. I call my diet Lazy Keto. Peter and I adore Easy Keto in 30 minutes by Yuvashi Petre. Try the chicken biryani with cauliflower rice and Sichuan pork with bok choy. In the morning, I love egg-topped ground lupini beans grits with kale smothered in garlic and olive oil. Of course, it helps that Peter cooks a lot of these meals, and that being allowed one cheat meal a week lets me eat an enchilada or a donut. However, these don't taste as good as they used to, and the waves of the fatigue I get after remind me of why eating them is no longer an everyday choice. Also critical, exercise. 7 months and 12 lost pounds later, I met with my nurse practitioner for the big reveal. After I'd related all I'd been doing, but before I got my results, she told me I was missing a piece of the puzzle. Even if my test told my blood sugar levels had returned to normal, I needed to add walking, yoga, or weightlifting to my daily routine. Exercise has diabetes management benefits beyond weight loss. In fact, even if weight loss hasn't happened yet, I tell my patients that's okay because your body composition is changing with exercise. Dr. Kalani says, as you lose fat and gain muscle, that muscle becomes more sensitive to insulin. Exercise can help manage blood glucose levels for up to 48 hours. Beyond activity itself, says Jill Kennelly, PhD, a professor of nutrition and exercise physiology at the University of Missouri, who has conducted multiple studies with people who have prediabetes and diabetes. Exercising at least every other day provides ongoing benefits, but the benefits disappear after one goes 48 to 72 hours without exercise. How much do you really need? Clinical guidelines from the American Diabetes Association suggest exercising for at least 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. If you have a strong family history of type 2 diabetes, it might be best to take it up a notch to 45 to 60 minutes a day, says Joanne E. Manson, MD, chief of the Preventive Medicine Division at Brigham and Women's Hospital and a professor at Harvard Medical School. Studies also show that interrupting extended periods of sitting is beneficial, so your daily exercise minutes could include getting up in at least once an hour to walk around. The problem, I never liked exercise. It made my knees and feet hurt. And to be totally honest, I got whiny. I was not alone. Some participants in Kennelly's studies at first insisted that they couldn't do it and they could never walk fast, she says. But after 2 weeks or so, they got over the hump. The biggest surprise, my experience, is that they really want to walk now, she says. This was true for me. I started looking forward to my walks. I tried to move every 45 minutes to get in a few steps and got antsy when I didn't. I even started lifting weights and it felt good. What's next for a pre-diabetic? I did it. My test results showed that my blood sugar was no longer in the pre-diabetic range. I wanted to celebrate with a pint of ice cream, but that was not how this worked. Once you're in the pre-diabetes car, you don't get out. You can reverse it for a while or for the long term, but you're still in the car. My pancreas will always be compromised. Sometimes I wish I could take a pill to make all this go away. Studies are being conducted on whether vitamins or other supplements can improve glucose levels, but as Dr. Manson says, if you hope to pop a magic pill, it's just not there. But those lifestyle modifications, she says, are like an elixir of health. No longer being pre-diabetic is a strange kind of liberation. I can't go back to the lifestyle I had before, but I don't want to as much as I thought I would. It's crystal clear how my choices can lead to a better, longer, and healthier life. Naturally, I have a lot of plans for it, including having a small slice of my 80th birthday cake. Getting help. Around 10% of U.S. adults live with diabetes, but serious health disparities exist among them. Hispanics, Latinx adults are more than twice as likely as others to be hospitalized for end-stage kidney disease, according to data from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Native Americans and black adults are twice as likely as whites to die from diabetes. The damage is compounded by inequitable access to health care and discrimination from physicians, whether the bias is unconscious or conscious. Research shows, unfortunately, as a medical professional, I think it's indisputable that medicine, like everything else, has a racist history, Dr. Thomas says. The unspoken, inconvenient truth can result in a doctor's inability to connect with, which may impact time spent with the patient and medical decision-making. Find support through the National Diabetes Prevention Program, cdc.gov/diabetes/prevention. Run via local YMCAs and other partnerships. For instance, Change Your Lifestyle. Change Your Lifestyle CYL2 groups offer through the Black Women's Health Imperative, BWHI.org. Connect 12,000 participants in 12 cities. Don't put off a test. During COVID-19, it's more important than ever for those with a family history of diabetes or risk factors for it to get tested and treated. An underlying condition, diabetes, increases the risk of hospitalization and death for those who get the virus. Ask your doctor about options. That was Defying a Diagnosis. The next article is 60-Second Challenges by Mary Giles. Get everyone giggling at your next family game night or Thanksgiving celebration with activities that put motor skill, powers of concentration, and wits to the test. Players have 1 minute to complete each challenge, but you can laugh as long as you want. The Great Puzzle Race. Cut the fronts and backs of several cereal boxes into puzzle pieces. Let each contestant choose a puzzle to solve. the easier front of the box for kids, the back of the box for adults, and see who can piece theirs together before time is up. Speed building. Pull 15 to 20 boxes out of your recycling bin, from pasta boxes to shipping cartons, and tape them closed for stability. Challenge each contestant to see how high they can stack them. You can award a prize for using the most boxes too. Cotton ball balance. Players must transfer as many cotton balls or pom-poms as they can from one bowl to another. Sound easy? They can only use their mouths and a plastic spoon. Ping pong pitch. Set up a bucket and give the player a pile of ping pong balls. Mark a throwing line about 6 feet from the bucket and see how many balls they can bounce into it from there. Have a rebounder, one hand to return balls to the contestant. Penny pal. Challenge each player to see how many pennies they can stack using only one hand. The next article is The Editor's Note by Sarah Smith. Happiness and hope. I'm thinking we should all share some good news with one another right now. How about you? In one of the weekly meetings I attend, which we each take a minute to talk about something we're proud of from the previous week, the contributions have ranged from I gave up caffeine, to I double-checked my voter registration, to I learned to drive a tractor more. That was me. In the spirit, here are a few highlights from the issue that we hope will make you feel good. Mocktails are genius. Let's toast to fun drinks with no tomorrow morning side effects. Try our favorites. If you live with a snorer, we can help you sleep. We ask experts about ways to shut out the noise. And if you need that, I know you'll need it badly, so get yourself to page 68. It's possible to reverse prediabetes. I hate to give away the ending to a great story on page 56, but I'm happy for our writer, Laura Shin, who got a scary diagnosis and took action. Stress is not going to win. The holidays are tough for a lot of people, especially in this year of change. I'm proud of our thoughtful guide to navigate tricky situations with family on page 34. I hope it helps you. What about you? What's your good news? Share by emailing letters at prevention.com. I'd love to feature some of you in an upcoming issue. That was Editor's Note, Happiness and Hope by Sarah Smith. That concludes today's reading from Prevention Magazine. This has been Herbert Gilmore for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
This is a recording library of West Texas Community Update.
Need help? Know someone who does? If you or someone you care about are feeling overwhelmed with emotions like sadness, depression, or anxiety, or you feel like you want to harm yourself or others, call 911. Call the Disaster Distress Helpline at 800-985-5900 or call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233.
Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, it's the first of our Thanksgiving series of books with How to Bake the Perfect Pecan Pie by Gina Kalani. Lauren Hauser is home for the holidays, and she's been given a challenge, preparing her grandmother's pecan pie. The problem? Lauren's not famed for her baking skills. Still, no Thanksgiving would be complete without dessert, which is why Lauren finds herself searching for pecans on Thanksgiving Eve. Stumbling into a gorgeous stranger with bags of pecans seems like a holiday miracle. But despite Jack's kissable lips, he's frostier than a snow cone and out of sight before she can say Macy's Parade. Without her grandmother's pecan pie, it won't be a very happy Thanksgiving. What Lauren needs is a knight in shining armor, and it might just be that the magic of Thanksgiving will find her one. How to Bake the Perfect Pecan Pie by Gina Kalani. Weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 62 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 11 a.m.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Mary Ellen. Thank you for joining me. Beginning today with Pop Sugar. Everything you need to know if this is your first time voting by mail. By Catherine McLaughlin. Voting is an important part of our democracy, and it's crucial to understand your rights and responsibilities as the 2020 presidential election grows nearer. Traditionally, most eligible voters cast their ballots at polling stations in person on election day. However, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, many citizens are looking into absentee voting in order to avoid large crowds and gatherings. If this is your first time voting absentee, you may have questions about eligibility, process, and safety. What is absentee voting?